Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the CSX Corporation third quarter 2016 earnings call. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. During this call, all participants will be on listen-only mode. For opening remarks and introduction, I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. David Baggs, Vice President, Treasurer, and Investor Relations Officer for CSX Corporation.
Thank you, Shirley, and good morning, everyone. And again, welcome to CSX Corporation's third quarter 2016 earnings presentation. The presentation material that we'll review this morning, along with our expanded quarterly financial report and our safety and service measurements, are available on our website at csx.com under the Investor section. In addition, following the presentation, the webcast replay will be available on that same website. This morning, our presentation will be led by Michael Ward, the company's Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, and Frank Lonegro, our Chief Financial Officer. In addition, Cindy Sanborn, our Chief Operating Officer, and Frederick Eliason, our Chief Sales and Marketing Officer, will be available during the question and answer session. Now, before I turn the presentation over to Michael, let me remind everyone that the presentation and other statements made by the company contain forward-looking statements. You are encouraged to review the company's disclosure in the accompanying presentation on slide 2. This disclosure identifies forward-looking statements as well as the uncertainties and risks that could cause actual performance to differ materially from the results anticipated by these statements. In addition, at the end of the presentation, we will conduct a question and answer session with the research analysts. With 30 analysts covering CSX, and out of respect for everyone's time, including our investors, I would ask as a courtesy for you to limit your questions to one primary question and one follow-up question. And with that, let me turn the presentation over to CSX Corporation's Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Michael Ward. Michael?
Thank you, David. Good morning, everyone. Yesterday, CSX reported third quarter earnings per share of 48 cents compared to 52 cents per share in the same period last year. Revenue declined 8% in the quarter, consistent with an overall volume decline of 8%. Which included a 21% decline in coal volume. Turning to operations, safety performance remained strong and service levels continued to meet or exceed customer expectations, driving further network efficiency improvements. In addition, CSX further reduced structural costs in the quarter and aligned resources levels to lower volume while retaining the ability to flex those resources with demand. Continuing to match resources to demand, combined with our ongoing initiatives to support network fluidity, form the foundation to maximize future merchandise and intermodal growth opportunities. As significant cost savings partially offset the impact of lower volume and a changing business mix, operating income declined $92 million year over year to $841 million. At the same time, the operating ratio increased 70 basis points year over year to 69.0%. Before I hand the presentation over to Frank, let me thank our employees, customers, and suppliers for their skillful planning and tireless efforts working together to manage the effects of Hurricane Matthew over the weekend and through this week. Times like this remind us of the paramount importance of safety for our employees, customers, and the communities we serve, as well as the critical importance of the service we provide for American businesses. Now, I'll turn the presentation over to Frank, who will take us through the third quarter results and fourth quarter outlook in more detail. Frank?
Thank you, Michael, and good morning, everyone. Let me begin by providing more detail on our third quarter results. As Michael mentioned, revenue was down 8%, or $229 million versus the prior year, driven primarily by lower volumes. Total volume decreased 8%, which impacted revenue by about $220 million. In addition, fuel recoveries declined $63 million in the quarter, but was offset by strong core pricing from an improved service product. Same-store sales pricing for the third quarter was up 2.3% overall and 3.6% excluding coal. Other revenue decreased $9 million, driven mainly by lower incidental charges versus the prior year. Expenses decreased 7% versus the prior year, driven mainly by $112 million in efficiency gains and $53 million in lower volume-related costs. Operating income was $841 million in the third quarter, down 10% from last year. Looking below the line, interest expense was up slightly from last year, with higher debt levels partially offset by lower rates, while other income increased $11 million. And finally, income taxes were $260 million in the quarter, with an effective tax rate of about 36%. Overall, net earnings were $455 million, down 10% versus the prior year, and EPS was 48 cents per share, down 8% versus last year. Now let me turn to the market outlook for the fourth quarter. Looking forward, you will notice that the outlook reflects our adjusted market alignments. As released in our third quarter earnings, we are now referring to our markets as shown on this slide, which is consistent with how we are managing the business. The previous food and consumer market is now part of agricultural and food products. Waste and the fly ash business have moved to chemicals, and the equipment business now resides in the renamed metals and equipment market. Reclassed volume, revenue, and RPU information for the last 3 years are available on our investor relations webpage. In 2016, CSX's fiscal calendar includes a 53rd week, and as such, we will be reporting a 14-week fourth quarter. When taking the full quarter into account with an extra week versus the same period last year, we expect volume to be roughly flat. However, on a 13-week comparable quarter basis, we continue to see a soft but stabilizing industrial economy with volume down year over year. In addition to the standard view we provide each quarter, which on the slide shows expectations for the 13-week comparable period, we have included a red, yellow, green designation to the far right, which shows the full quarter impact of the extra week on volume expectations. That said, the market comments that follow reflect expectations on a 13-week comparable basis. Automotive is again expected to grow as light vehicle production remains strong and new business continues to ramp up. Agricultural and food products is expected to be neutral. The record grain harvest will drive year-over-year gains. However, market dynamics for ethanol remain challenged near-term for CSX due to increased movements in storage in the Gulf region. Export coal is also neutral, as we are seeing some near-term increase in metallurgical demand driven by reduced Chinese supply, such that volume should be similar to last year's levels. We expect our full-year export coal tonnage to be around 25 million tons. Chemicals will be down, with continued weakness in drilling-related products, especially crude oil, due to low crude oil prices and unfavorable spreads. This impact more than offsets growth in core chemicals and the continued ramp-up of new fly ash business. Domestic coal will again be down. However, in the fourth quarter, we will cycle the start of the pronounced market weakness, which took hold in the fourth quarter last year. While the excess supply of natural gas continues to provide a price point that favors gas burn over coal, the easier comparables will moderate the rate of decline we've seen over the last several quarters. We expect domestic coal tonnage to be relatively stable to what we saw in the third quarter. Intermodal will decline as we continue to cycle competitive losses in international in the fourth quarter. Additionally, as we previously reported, we will continue to cycle some short-haul traffic loss in the domestic market, which began in the third quarter. Absent this, we continue to experience strength in the domestic segment driven by our strategic network investments that support highway-to-rail conversion. Minerals will be down in the quarter as we cycle a strong period last year that benefited from an extended aggregate shipping season in the north due to mild weather late into the year. Overall, on a comparable 13-week basis, we expect volume to be down mid-single digits. Low crude oil, natural gas, and other commodity prices, as well as strength in the U.S. dollar, continue to challenge the rail marketplace, although the impact of these factors is beginning to moderate as we move through a full year of this external climate. When we report earnings in the fourth quarter, our GAAP numbers will include the full 14 weeks of volume and revenue. Again, a preview of 14-week volume expectations is reflected to the far right of the slide, which in total represents about flat volume year over year. When we report next quarter, we will provide a breakout of volume and revenue for the final week of the fiscal year, which is a holiday week, to facilitate year-over-year comparisons. Turning to the next slide, let me talk about our expectations for expenses in the fourth quarter. As a result of aggressive cost actions, we have achieved over $340 million of efficiency gains year-to-date and now expect full-year productivity savings to be about $400 million. Looking at the fourth quarter, the drivers for each expense category are shown on a comparable 13-week basis versus the prior year. Separately, at the bottom of the slide, we have provided guidance for the incremental costs associated with the 53rd week this year. In addition, we will be cycling $48 million of restructuring costs in the fourth quarter, which impacted labor and fringe by $37 million and MS&O by $11 million in the prior year. Looking first at labor and fringe, we expect fourth quarter average headcount to be down slightly on a sequential basis, although not to the same level we saw in the third quarter. Labor inflation is expected to be around $30 million in the fourth quarter, which we expect to be more than offset by continued efficiency and volume-related cost savings. Similar to this quarter, we expect a headwind in the fourth quarter of about $40 million versus the prior year, driven by higher incentive compensation. As a reminder, in 2015, we saw incentive compensation decrease in the second half of the year, as sharp declines in the energy markets, coupled with broad-based commodity and dollar impacts, drove CSX's financial results well below our initial expectations. MS&O expense is expected to be relatively flat to the prior year, with continued efficiency gains offsetting inflation. We expect fuel expense to decline in the fourth quarter, with a higher cost per gallon year over year, reflecting the current forward curve, being more than offset by volume-related savings and continued focus on fuel efficiency. We expect depreciation in the fourth quarter to increase around $15 million versus the prior year, reflecting the ongoing investment in the business, partially offset by the favorable impact of an equipment life study. Equipment and other rents in the fourth quarter are expected to be relatively flat to the prior year, with the benefit of improved car cycle times offsetting higher freight car rates and the increase in volume-related costs associated with automotive growth. Finally, fourth quarter expense will also be impacted by the extra week. And when we report earnings in the fourth quarter, we will provide detail to help you better understand the impact of the 53rd week. Now, let me wrap up on the next slide. With macroeconomic and energy headwinds impacting most markets, CSX once again delivered solid financial results in the third quarter. This success is driven by pricing for the relative value of rail service, driving efficiency gains, and aligning resources to the softer demand environment, which partially offset an 8% volume decline this quarter. To mitigate the weak demand, we have taken significant cost actions this year, resulting in year-to-date efficiency savings of about $340 million and right-sizing savings of around $200 million. We continue to pursue structural cost opportunities across the network and now expect full-year efficiency savings to be about $400 million. Looking at our expectations for the fourth quarter, as I mentioned previously, we expect volume to be relatively flat to last year, which includes the impact of the extra week. We remain intensely focused on pricing to the value of our service and expect our strong cost performance to continue into the fourth quarter. We will also be cycling an $80 million property gain from the prior year, which was below the line in other income, in addition to cycling the $48 million in restructuring costs. As a result, we expect fourth quarter earnings per share on a reported basis, including the impact of the extra week, to be flat to slightly down versus the earnings we reported last year. With that, let me turn the presentation back to Michael for his closing remarks.
Thank you, Frank. As you heard today, CSX is continuing to drive results for shareholders in this dynamic business climate by aggressively managing costs and delivering record efficiency savings. The men and women of CSX are working relentlessly to safely, efficiently, and successfully serve our customers. As we continue to manage through the current macroeconomic and energy environment, we are simultaneously focused on positioning CSX to maximize opportunities going forward. The transformation into the CSX of tomorrow requires growth and increased profitability in our merchandise and intermodal businesses, while preserving the business value of coal as it becomes a smaller part of CSX going forward. With that focus, we'll continue to drive earnings growth and margin expansion for our shareholders as we redeploy capital to further improve the network, support new technology solutions and automation, and enhance merchandise and intermodal operations. With continued population growth as well as the challenges facing the trucking industry, we remain confident in the long-term secular growth prospects for domestic intermodal. In support of that vision, we continue our multi-year strategy to add network capabilities and new service offerings. This strategy supports improved profitability and the ability to serve ever more service-sensitive freight. As we look to the future, our core earnings power remains strong, and the CSX of tomorrow will continue delivering compelling shareholder value as we further progress toward the target of a mid-60s operating ratio longer term. And now we'll be pleased to take your questions.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. To withdraw your question, you may press star followed by two. Again, press star followed by one to ask a question. And one moment for our first question. Our first question comes from Tom Wadewitz with UBS. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, everyone. And, congratulations on the really strong results on the cost side, Bert. Obviously good execution. Wanted to see if you could offer some thoughts about, the run rate, the $400 million you're talking about this year is very strong. And then so you say, well, what does the pipeline look like? And, what does the run rate look like going forward? Is that something that you can, potentially sustain at, $300-400 million in 2017? How would you, can you offer some thoughts on the pipeline and, how much is already done and, what you can offer looking forward? Thanks.
Okay, Tom. Good morning. This is Cindy. Here's how I think about this year and going into next year. So when we as a company started looking at how coal was becoming less and less of our product mix, our service product mix, we took a real hard look at how we needed to use our network differently to drive efficiencies, to drive margin expansion from the cost perspective. So a portion of what you have seen here this year is looking at structural changes in the coal fields, and we're lapping those this month, actually, when we shut down Irwin and Corbin. And so those would not obviously repeat going into future years. But we're also have looked at driving density both on our routes, on our core routes, and density on our trains in terms of train length. And while we are lapping some of the big steps that we were able to take with train length, we do see other opportunities for that. It does require investment, so the timing of it becomes comes contingent upon those investments being coming to fruition. And then there's a traditional productivity that we look at and have over many, many years. And technology is a huge part of that. So is streamlining to align with our core network, our network of tomorrow. And so when I think about that type of technology or that type of productivity, I see next year looking a little bit more normalized in terms of run rate around offsetting inflation around $150 million. But we don't put any upper limits on productivity. We are going to address and bring in everything we possibly can. And I think particularly the technology lever is an exciting one for us, both in terms of mobility and utilizing machine vision, and then other areas around predictive analytics to help us be more reliable with our assets. So I think you'll see us, we've pulled a lot forward into this year, which is part of what you're pulling on. I think we'll see a more normal year next year, but we are not leaving anything on the table.
So the 150 you mentioned, that's a reasonable number to look at, or that's kind of the core and you would expect to do beyond that?
That's a reasonable number to look at based on the investments we're going to make coming to fruition.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. And this question comes from Allison Landry with Credit Suisse. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Good morning, Allison.
Hi, good morning. This is Danny Schuster on for Allison. How are you doing this morning?
Good.
So last year, you had, on a net basis, a couple of pennies of one-time benefits. So I guess I was just trying to understand if earnings are, flat to slightly down in 4Q this year, does that imply that core earnings are actually starting to grow? And should we see that trend accelerate with continued cost reductions, moderating coal volumes, export coal pricing, over the next few quarters? Thank you.
Hey, Danny, it's Frank. We tried to give you some insight into Q4 on a reported against a reported basis, the flat to slightly down, to try to give you a sense of some normal seasonality in the business quarter over quarter, as well as, perhaps a little bit of conservatism around what the impacts of the hurricane are ultimately going to be. So we tried to give you some clarity there, and I think what you're going to continue to see us do, as Cindy mentioned, is continue to focus on a great service product and the productivity, as well as strong pricing for the value of the service we provide. So the thesis will remain the same going forward. So I think we tried to give you some sense of where we'll end up the quarter, and obviously that gives you some implication for the year and thinking about next year as well.
Great. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rob Salmon with Deutsche Bank. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hey, good morning, guys. Frank, with With your prior comments, you alluded to incorporating some of a hurricane impact on the fourth quarter. Can you give us a sense of what's baked into the model? And then a side-related actually a differing question there, but we saw some really nice improvement in the intermodal RPU last quarter. Could you talk about your pricing initiatives within that segment and how much of that improvement was kind of the lapping out of some of the shorter length of haul business?
Right, so really three parts there. I'll tackle the financial piece of the hurricane, kick it over to Cindy and let her talk about the hurricane impacts, and then obviously Frederick on the intermodal side. You know, we're still early in the process of understanding the impact of the hurricane. Cindy will talk about where we are operationally. You know, we do have something modeled in there, but it's really just an early estimate. Until we get everything back up and running and we do the tally, we really don't have a good number for you this morning. We'll be out in early November, and we'll certainly have all of the things tied out by then, and it'll give you a sense of the impact then. But let me let Cindy talk about the operational piece.
Yeah, as far as Hurricane Matthew, I think both from a preparation and recovery, our employees have done an outstanding job managing through a storm that was highly impactful in terms of the amount of territory that was affected. And so as of this morning, we are open on our core route on I-95, albeit with the use of generators to provide power to our assets that require electricity at crossings and signaling systems with generators. And commercial power is still not back. We'll still be nursing those generators until we can get commercial power back. But opening that route is very, very important to us. It's part of our triangle of core operations. We do have yet still some branch lines that are out, so unable to serve those customers as of this point, but we see good equipment availability and energy around getting those routes restored as well. And I think our impacts are going to be, some will be capital, some will be operating expense, and then within that operating expense, we'll see some cycle time impacts from the storm. But truthfully, I am extremely pleased with where we are, considering where the hurricane affected us and how quickly we've been able to come back.
And Cindy, on some of those secondary lines, the waters have not even peaked yet. So that until it does, it's hard to even get in there and assess the damage, right?
Yeah, specifically in and around Lumberton, North Carolina, we still have our railroad under several feet of water, and it's going to be days before those floodwaters recede, and obviously it's affecting the community as well. And restoring service in all these areas, we feel like, helps the communities recover as we bring in supplies. So there's still quite a bit of work to do.
And then in terms of the intermodal question, we are continuing to get some price in intermodal. Obviously not as much as we have in the past because of the excess capacity that's out in the marketplace. That is offset by what we're seeing on the fuel side. But we're also seeing some positive mix in the portfolio. Part of that is some of the short-haul business that has shifted over. So overall, we're pretty pleased with the performance we've seen from an RPU perspective in intermodal business.
Well, thanks so much for all the color, and congrats on a great quarter and managing through a really tough backdrop as well as navigating the hurricane.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Ravi Shankar with Morgan Stanley. You may ask your question.
Morning, Ravi.
Thanks. Morning, everyone. So as a follow-up to the pricing question, your all-in same-store pricing continues to remain above inflation, which is great, but it has been sequentially declining a little bit. So how do we think about that in the fourth quarter and beyond? I mean, what's the floor for that number? Is it at this level? Is that inflation? And does the bounce in export coal help you at all starting next quarter?
Sure. So in terms of overall same-store sale pricing, we're obviously very transparent what we're doing there each and every quarter. You'll have an opportunity to see that in the fourth quarter. There is clearly a more difficult freight environment than has been there for a period of time as we see a significant amount of excess capacity. Our focus continues to be to price the value that we provide our customers to be able to continue to reinvest. We have an improved service product year over year that is very helpful. And what we're trying to do is to sell through this trough, so to speak, and sell the kind of the long-term access to our network and the capacity that we have. Specifically to export coal, I think we've been very transparent over the last couple of years that as the market has gotten tougher since 2012, we have been taking our prices down to obviously optimize our own portfolio, but also to help strategically some of the producers. We do have the ability to touch those contracts on essentially a quarterly basis, or some of those are indexed. And so with the uptick in the benchmark that we've seen here, which obviously gives us an opportunity to leverage that uptick, which is good news.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. And this question comes from Ken Hoexter with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. You may ask your question.
Good morning.
Great. Good morning. Thanks, Michael. Just wanted to talk. You mentioned to Tom earlier about increasing car lengths and maybe more investment. Cindy, is this something you need to make more additional capex and spending on to be able to get even longer train lengths? Is that something that you're starting to peak out, or is there still additional room for productivity improvement there?
Yeah, Ken. So I would say that we are making investments. I've been talking the last couple of quarters about our route from Nashville to Cincinnati that we were investing in this year, that would be in service as of the third quarter. So it is in service, and we have seen some good improvement in length there. We were restricted to based on sidings to about 6,500 feet on that corridor. So it's that type of investment that we will continue.
What can you do now?
Across there, about 12,000 feet. So, moving forward, we have identified locations to continue those types of investments. But as you relieve the pressure on the corridor that we just did, then you now find that you're meeting up against some other impacts on other corridors. So, that's where we'll be looking and are looking and in the process of assessing and/or building to continue to improve in train length.
Hey, Ken, one other thing on the CapEx, what Cindy's referring to is absolutely what we're going to do going forward. It's a reallocation of capital within that longer-term guidance that we've spoken about previously. So as you go into 2017, the things that are strategically aligned in terms of the network of the tomorrow, highly automated railroad, service excellence, et cetera, those are going to be within the confines of the normal capital process. And as you size that next year, I wouldn't think of that as being incremental investment versus reallocated investment within that portfolio.
That's really helpful. Thanks, Frank. Fred, a follow-up, if I may. On coal, your thoughts on utility, on where inventory levels are. This is really interesting just given, I don't know, maybe the extended heat that we had here, but is there stabilization going on the domestic side? Your thoughts, are we at an inflection point perhaps where, I don't know, if inventory levels have come down far enough or if nat gas pricing is high enough? You maybe just throw some thoughts on the domestic side.
Sure. So clearly the hot summer has been helpful. The cooling degree days has been very helpful, especially in the south. We've seen significant reduction in the inventory levels. I think in the south, in terms of days burn, we're down to from 150 a year ago to somewhere around 100 now. And even in the north, we've come down a little bit. I would say, though, overall, that they're probably still slightly above where they would like for them to be. There's certain places there's less, certain places there are more, but they're probably still a little bit above where they would like it for them to be. But it is good news that we're starting to see that, and also to your point about natural gas prices, they have come up a little bit, and that's also helpful. Now, generally, though, we do need to see those natural gas prices closer to 350 or above to make a really meaningful impact. And we're excited where we're heading. We'll have a much better view, I think, as we get into the fourth quarter and early next year in terms of what coal will do for 2017, not just on the domestic side, but also on the export side.
Thanks for the thoughts. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And this question comes from Brandon Oglenski with Barclays. You may ask your question.
Good morning, Brandon.
Hey, good morning, Michael, and thanks for taking my question. So when I look at these efficiency numbers, they're pretty big. You know, when we're talking about $300 to $400 million in efficiency this year, you know, that would equate to, I don't know, maybe greater than 3% on the operating ratio, 300 basis points that is. So, I mean, is that the type of improvement that investors should be thinking about as we look into 17 and beyond? Can we start to see, you know, 100, 200 basis points improvement annually in the operating ratio if these efficiency targets hold and you get to a more stable or maybe even a growth environment?
So I think, you know, as I said before, we had a pretty extraordinary year this year, which you're referring to, which is part of our views on how our business mix has changed with a less reliance upon coal. And so there's some structural takeout that we put in place that can't repeat because it is structural around the coal markets. But going forward, we have lapped for this year some of our train length initiatives, but as I mentioned the last question, we see opportunities going forward. We see productivity available to us that we traditionally have around streamlining, again, around our core network, which is part of our network of tomorrow. But I think it, run rate-wise, looking into 2017, it would be more of a $150 million offsetting inflation kind of number to base off of after having such a strong year this year. But we don't stop thinking about ways to improve in our efficiencies. We understand that as our business mix changes, we have to make our merchandise and intermodal service products more profitable. And from the cost, and the operating department has a huge lever we have to pull on the cost side to make that happen. So we're going to continue to look for those opportunities and drive it forward. And I will say, add to that, that we also are going to serve our customers effectively to provide a very good service for them that allows Frederick to grow the business and price the business.
Brandon, one other thought is in terms of your allusion to growth there, as we grow, especially if we grow in the class merchandise business and automotive and intermodal, I mean, you are going to see incremental margins that really pull on the operating leverage point. So in addition to the productivity line, you should see the benefit of that, again, if the economy is cooperative for us longer term.
Yeah, I should add, we do see capability of adding growth in any pretty much any market without adding cost back one for one. So we do see great leverage there.
Well, I guess, you know, I don't want to be too critical here, but if all you're doing is offsetting inflation next year, let's say, on the productivity side, you know, this is going to come off as critical, but how is the CSX of tomorrow any different than Grow to 65 by 2015, which we heard in 2011? It just sounds like it's going to be a struggle to get a lot of operating ratio improvement unless something changes on the demand side, or am I thinking about that wrong?
I mean, I think, you know, there's no – everything's on the table, has been for, you know, as long as I've worked here, and we are continuing to make sure that there's some – any opportunity we have, we're going to take advantage of. So I think, to your point, you know, it may seem not as strong as this year, but our objectives are to not just look at 2017 by itself, but also continuing into the future and drive operating margins on the cost side. And we're coming off a strong year. We think we can offset inflation next year, but we're not going to leave any opportunity out there on the cost side.
Brandon, this is Michael. I mean, obviously, productivity is going to be key, and we'll, as Cindy said, always strive to do more than what she's talking about. But growth does have to be a critical component as we move to the mid-60s operating ratio. We've been a pretty tepid economy here for the last 2 years, and clearly growth has to be part of that equation. And we think with the service product we have, Frederick's team can grow it once we see any signs of vibrancy in the economy, but that is part of the equation.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon, we're confident in our ability to get to the mid-60s operating ratio. The timing of that is going to depend on the rate of decline in coal, obviously, but, you know, continuing to focus on value pricing for the service product that we provide to our customers, continuing to have productivity offset inflation. I mean, you do get margin expansion by doing that year over year.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Brian Ossenbeck with JPMC. You may ask your question.
Morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for getting me on the call here. Just a question on the coal network and rationalizing that further. Obviously, you made some actions with Irwin and Corbin that you're going to lap here pretty soon into next year. So what are you looking at when it comes to being able to take the next steps? Is it just coal volumes getting to a certain level, densities perhaps getting a little bit higher when you factor in some of the point-to-point pricing? So just kind of your thought process and how you what do you think just generally on timing for some of these initiatives to keep moving in the coal fields?
Well, I think we are going to serve our coal customers well, and that is, Frederick and I work, and our teams work on that to make sure that we are available and capable of providing service to our coal customers. As things change within the coal fields, even more than they already have, we will take the steps that we need to take to structurally change along with those changes. So we're prepared to continue to look there, but it's a profitable business for us, and we intend to stay in that business where the customers are for as long as they're there.
Okay, thanks, Cindy. Just, Michael, one follow-up on the growth that you mentioned. Port of Savannah was out maybe a couple weeks ago now announcing a large expansion of the rail terminal there. Looks like they're going to double capacity, longer trains at the facility. Is that volume starting to be spoken for, attracting customers, or do you really need to see the port finish the complete expansion, you know, sometime in 2020 before that would really start to drive some more volume on your network? Thanks.
Sure. This is Frederick. You know, what we're seeing and have been seeing is a continued shift towards more East Coast international intermodal coming in versus West Coast. And as a result, the ports are clearly making investment, not just Savannah, but other ports as well. And we are as well to make sure we can serve that. And that is attractive business that we want to get more of. And as we see additional investment come online, we'll have an opportunity. In the Savannah case, we certainly have grown our business significantly there already, and we expect to continue to see that going forward. But that is true for the other ports as well.
Okay. Thanks, Frederick.
Thank you. And this question comes from Christian Weatherby with Citigroup. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Morning, Christian.
Morning, guys. My question is on CapEx. Just kind of wondering, as we look at the year-to-date progress so far towards the $2.7 billion number, there still is a lot left to go here, but I don't think you're kind of taking that 2.7 number down. I'm guessing that the locomotive pull forward from 2017 might still be back-end weighted. It might be part of that sort of billion-dollar plus that I think you're targeting for the fourth quarter, but just want to get a rough sense of maybe how we think about this number, and then maybe thinking a little bit longer term to a previous question. Frank, you said it's sort of a reallocation of sort of where you're spending the capital. You know, what is the right number to be thinking about of that reallocated capital? Is it a percent of revenue? Is it an absolute number in the, you know, mid $2 billion type of range? I just want to get a rough sense of maybe how to think about that.
Sure. Hey, Chris, Frank. So on the 2.7, that is what we call our managed capital number. As part of that, you'll have two things in there. You'll have the $300 million or so that we pulled forward from the seller financing of next year into this year and paying off locomotives as delivered. The other piece, which will show up in other financing activities, so not in the property additions line, will be $300 million for paying off engines that we took delivery of last year. So your 2.7 is, again, we're trying to be very transparent with you in terms of the capital dollars that we're spending this year, although you do have some geography differences on the cash flow statement. In terms of 2017, when you think about where we are, we're looking very hard at infrastructure and equipment, given the environment that we're in and given the network of tomorrow strategy that we have. What we've been talking about is, in a normalized, say, a 5 or 10 year view in retrospect for CapEx, we generally spent somewhere between, you know, 12% and 15% of that capital portfolio on return-seeking investments. What we're looking forward to doing on a going-forward basis is to increase that allocation to more like 20% or 25% of the capital portfolio. So, you know, not looking to necessarily increase capital based on the strategy, really looking to reallocate to make sure that we're focused on the things that are going to drive value in the future.
Okay, that's helpful. I appreciate that color. And then the follow-up, just sort of in the context of capital allocation across sort of the spectrum, when you think about next year, debt levels relative to share buybacks, how should we be thinking about how does share buyback kind of play into the long-term plan?
Sure. It's part of the balanced deployment of capital. Certainly the primary focus of capital is going to be to reinvest in the business for a reliable railroad and, you know, accretive type investments. Secondarily would be the dividend piece, and obviously we're looking hard at that since we took a break this year on the dividend, but we're going to look hard at that next year. And then looking at where we are on operating cash flow next year and sizing a buyback program that, you know, generally we talk to you about in the end of the first quarter of the given year. So I think that order is important for the investors to keep in mind in realizing that the environment that we're in now is perhaps quite a bit different than the environment that we were in 2015 when we increased the dividend by 2 cents and announced the two-year, $2 billion program that we'll complete by April of next year.
Okay. That's very helpful. Thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Bascom Majors with Susquehanna. Your line is open. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, Frank. Hey, thank you. Good morning. Frank, I wanted to drill down on another answer on the margins and cost side. You know, given the cost takeout that you've achieved over the last several quarters, you know, it's been a while since we've had a year where you went from a big revenue decline to potentially return to growth. And, you know, your best incrementals of the recent years have been around 50% on the margin side. I'm just curious, you know, not necessarily saying that revenue will return next year, but when it does return, you know, given the takeouts you've done, what kind of incrementals ballpark are you thinking about in the business?
When you look at what we've done on the cost side, certainly that sets up incremental margins that that are probably better than what they've been historically. But as I alluded to in the answer to the earlier question, it really depends on how the business comes back. If it comes back in areas where you're adding a boxcar onto an existing train, an intermodal container onto an existing train, an auto rack onto an existing train, you know, that's really where you're going to get the incremental margins and the operating leverage that you're referring to. If it's something that's on the bulk side of the business, which is going to be a new train start, the incremental margins are going to essentially be what the absolute margins are in that business by and large. So I do think we've set ourselves up for a good run as the economy improves and as volumes comes back, especially on the class side of the business.
Well, thank you for that. And just, you know, a bit of a housekeeping on your cost guidance for 4Q. You know, the MS&O guide of flat year over year, you know, that's signaling a pretty significant Q over Q growth, maybe 12% or so. And I know you have the extra week, but that's maybe 10 points or so above the typical sequential growth there. Can you just help us understand what's driving that besides above and beyond the extra week?
Yeah, there's a few things on the sequential side to think through, given that we've got some incremental bulk business on the export side, the grain side, and the automotive side. We've got additional engines and freight cars in the mix relative to third quarter. So, you know, clearly that's going to impact the MS&O line on the materials and supply side. You know, we are expecting normal seasonality in terms of normal winter. We didn't see necessarily as much of that last year, but we're expecting that this year, just given what we understand the winter to hold. There's a normal seasonal shift between the third quarter and the fourth quarter as we stop the construction season, as it gets, you know, too cold and too icy to work up north. So we do have that. And then there's, you know, normally on the technology side as annual hardware software maintenance contracts come due. So we have, you know, that just in terms of seasonality. And then, you know, we're usually a little less fuel efficient as we get into the fourth quarter. I mean, we're going to pull on everything as you've seen us do already this year. But as we set up a more normal fourth quarter, that's how we see it going. The other thing to think through is a lot of the hurricane side expenses, to the extent they hit the OPEX line, are going to hit here. So we've got a little bit of peace in there. And then, you know, when you look at the productivity, as we've targeted about $400 million, it implies about a $60 million run rate for the quarter, and that's a little less than what we had seen in the third quarter. So you add all of that up, and it's going to be about flat on a year-over-year basis.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Bas.
Thank you. And this question comes from Scott Group with Wolfe Research. Your line is open.
Morning, Scott.
Hey, thanks. Morning, guys. Wanted to just go back to coal for a second. Frederick, do you have the inventory levels for the north? And then on the met side, how quickly do the export rates reset higher? And can you just kind of frame what that opportunity is? Maybe how much have the export rates dropped over the past 5 years, and kind of order of magnitude, how much do you think that they can rebound?
Sure. And in terms of the inventory levels, we use PIRA data. So in the north, we went from about 95 days of burn at this time of last year, and we're down to 90 now. And in the south, 150 down to about 102. So significant improvement, but as I said earlier, still above what I would consider target level at this time of the year. What is target has obviously changed a little bit more difficult these days because it depends a lot on where that utility is in the dispatch order, et cetera. To your question about MET, obviously it's come down significantly, and I don't have a number that I think we've shared before, but it is a significant adjustment, and you've seen that play out in our RPU line since 2012. And as we now sit here and we've seen the benchmark go up to 200 from 9250, I think it was in the third quarter, that is an opportunity for us to leverage. And our contracts have evolved over time to be essentially quarterly or based on an index that is tied to the benchmark.
Okay. And then just lastly, for Frank, and I know we've got a big incentive comp headwind in fourth quarter, third quarter. Should we be thinking about a similar large headwind in the first half of next year too, or do we kind of move to more of a normalized incentive comp run rate on a year-over-year basis, 17?
Yeah, more normalized.
Okay, perfect. All right, thank you, guys.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason Seidl with Cowen. Your line is open.
Morning, Jason.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone. I guess I'll piggyback a little bit on that Cole question. You know, when you talk about more normalized target levels, where would you put those target levels in both your southern and northern regions?
Well, as I said, in the past, we have used that the targeted days burn somewhere around, 55 in the north, 70 in the south. However, I do think that could be a little bit misleading these days because of the fact that utilities are situated very differently in terms of where they are in the dispatch order. It was easier to give those target levels in the past when you were the base load. Now it varies really by utility. But the good news is we made significant inroads, especially in the south, and we're getting closer to a more normalized level. And there are utilities, and we've seen this here over the last 3 months, that clearly are below where they want to be, but we still have several utilities that are significantly above.
Okay. And when you look at sort of that 350 bogey you brought up with natural gas, if we are well above that for a considerable amount of time, what percent of the business do you think that's of your coal business is going to be positively affected by that?
Yeah, so if you look at where we were here this quarter, we had about 58% of our business either came from Illinois Basin or Powder River Basin. We saw a pretty significant shift towards Illinois Basin within that number. And we have said publicly that when it's 350 or above, that part of our portfolio, so 58% of our portfolio, is essentially in the money. And that will allow for a significant increased utilization of those plants. Now, there's a lot of other factors that plays into that. Clearly, where the plants are located makes a big difference. As you well know, that the natural gas prices of $3.50 is a Henry Hub price. It is very different in certain parts of our service territory. But as a general rule, I still think that holds pretty well in terms of indication of where the plants that we serve become more competitive.
Okay, that was very helpful. I guess my follow-up question is going to be, on the pricing side, when you look at intermodal merchandise, still well above your cost inflation, but it did decelerate on a sequential basis. How are you thinking about sort of that truck competitive market going forward? It looks like we've had a little bit of an uptick on the spot side here, and with ELDs coming up, what are you guys looking for in 17 on that market?
Sure. I mean, it is clear that we've had a tough market for an extended period of time now, in terms of excess capacity, and it does impact not just intermodal business, but certain markets within our merchandise business as well. Generally, shorter haul, also generally lower contributory traffic that are most susceptible to being switched over to truck. As the market turns, and it will turn, we see new orders of truck, of Class 8 trucks have come down significantly, 30-40% year over year, year to date. We know ELDs will be coming in by, you know, sometime in the second half of next year. And if the economy continues to expand and unemployment stays low, that should lead to a much better environment as we get into late 17, and that will be helpful. So our challenge to our team right now is to sell that improved service product that we have, sell through this kind of trough, and sell that long-term access to our network that allows us to continue to reinvest in our business.
Well, Frederick, thank you for all that color, and everyone, thank you for your time as always.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ben Hartford with Baird. Your line is open. Go ahead with your question.
Morning, Ben.
Hey, good morning, all. Cindy, could you talk about when you would anticipate a trough in the in the employee count? Is there any sort of visibility to that during the fourth quarter or in the early part of 2017?
Hey, it's Frank. You know, what we did was we guided to down slightly sequentially, but also put a bit of a qualifier on that one, given the fact that we were probably down more than slightly sequentially from Q2 to Q3. So we're continuing to look across the board at all areas of resources, whether it's, you know, train and engine crews or folks in the rest of the operating department or folks on the G&A side. I mean, what you've seen is an across-the-board approach in terms of overall productivity as well as on the resource side and challenging, you know, the need for every dollar and, you know, every vacancy when it comes up. We're taking a look at it and making sure whether or not we need to fill that. So I think you're going to continue to see us focus, although the magnitude of the decreases on a year-over-year basis are obviously going to get smaller and smaller as we go forward. But you'll continue to see us look very hard at resources. Cindy, anything
to add?
I think
you hit it.
Okay.
Good. And then, Frederick, if I could ask you just more of a conceptual question on the volume side. Volumes over the past 10 or 15 years have been flattish to even down. Obviously, the coal headwinds have been noted. So as we look forward, the economic environment being uncertain, if we use industrial production growth as a guide, do you have confidence or any sort of visibility to volume growth more closely approximating even, you know, whatever U.S. IP growth ends up being as we transition away from coal, given the volume growth opportunities longer term on the intermodal side, or is that 10 to 15-year trend of kind of flattish volumes in the business, is that still a pretty appropriate bogey to think about over the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that if you look at a long period of time, if you take out the coal business, you just look at the correlation between IDP and our merchandise business, it has correlated pretty well with it, probably just slightly underperformed IDP over an extended period of time, several decades. As I think about 2017 right now, and obviously we are in the middle of our planning season and getting a lot of feedback for our customers, if you take out our coal business and also by the crude by rail business, which is energy related, if you take that out and we look at the rest of the portfolio, our merchandise and our intermodal business, we feel pretty good about what the portfolio can do here after a very tough period of time, and that we have pretty good confidence that based on the economic indicators we're seeing right now, based on the feedback from the customer, that we can return to more normalized growth environment next year in our non-energy businesses. We will have a much better sense of the energy businesses as we get through the fourth quarter, but we are encouraged by what we're seeing in terms of our initial planning assumptions right now.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Cherilyn Radbourne with TD Securities. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Good morning, Cherilyn.
Thanks very much and good morning. One of the things that really stood out in the quarter for me was just the year-over-year improvement in labor efficiency, just given the volume decline that you were facing. Just wondering if you can give us some practical examples of how you're continuing to generate that labor productivity.
Okay, Sherilyn, thanks. I think one of the better examples would be our longer train initiative, so looking at density of trains and being able to operate the same number of cars in fewer chunks. I think we also were utilizing technology to help us as well and being able to automate processes. So those are probably two of the bigger examples I could give you.
And then, Sherilyn, just in terms of sort of raw orders of magnitude, the 3,900 or so positions that we were down year over year, the majority of those, and this is both the efficiency side as well as the volume variable side, come out of the train and engine mechanical and the ops support side of the business, but engineering, intermodal, G&A are also down year over year. I mean, we are down across the board in terms of resources on a year over year basis, and I think you're going to continue, you know, with a, perhaps the exception of technology, as we really, you know, go into the highly automated railroad part of our strategy. I mean, pretty much every group is trying to be as lean as they can.
Great, thank you. That's all for me.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Vernon with Bernstein. Your line is open. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, good morning, guys, and thanks for taking the question. Congratulations on the productivity here. This has obviously been the big part of the story this year. As we think about next year and the growth being a little bit more in the scheduled network businesses around merchandise and intermodal, should we be thinking that the incremental fall-through on that business could actually be a little bit better than maybe we've seen the incremental margins on average run in the past?
Yeah, I think with the expenses that we've taken out in the scheduled network and sort of across the board, that obviously sets us up for incremental margins that are healthy and perhaps a little bit better than they have been in the past. So yes is the answer to the question.
Excellent. And then maybe just kind of if we think about the business in the next couple of years, let's say if we're kind of flat volume, obviously, the productivity has been a big part of it, but how should we be thinking about the sort of organic earnings potential in the business over the next couple of years? Is it possible to continue to pull out cost and grow for a few years, or do you think it's going to be a little bit more of kind of holding the line just in kind of a flat growth environment?
Well, I think if you're flat on volume and don't have any mix impacts associated with it, it's really going to be what we've been able to do in the past, which is, you know, we'll continue to offset inflation with productivity. We'll continue to have value pricing that'll fall to the bottom line, and the combination of those two things, you know, will provide margin expansion on a year-over-year basis in the environment that you mentioned.
So you'd actually expect a little bit of sustainable earnings power, even if there was a little, even if we were in a flat volume environment.
Correct.
Excellent. Thanks very much for your time, guys, and congratulations on a great quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this question comes from Scott Schneider with Oppenheimer. Your line is open. Go ahead with your question.
Morning.
Thanks. Good morning. Automotive remains an area of strength for you. Just curious, how sustainable do you think it is just from an end market perspective? And also you cite new business ramp-ups in the slide deck. Just what type of contribution should we think about over the coming quarters there? Thanks.
Sure. So obviously, auto has been at a pretty high level here this year in terms of production. I think the latest estimate that I've seen is about 17.9 in terms of production. We're more closely tied to production than sales. And next year, the latest estimate I have is a slight increase to about 18 million vehicles. And so that's helpful. We have onboarded some new customers this year that's helped. And the contribution of that traffic is very attractive, and it has been a great journey for the automotive market overall coming out of recession. But it is probably fair to say that at the moment it looks like we're hitting that high watermark, so to speak. We don't see necessarily coming down significantly from that. We think we're going to be moved more in line with what we're currently seeing. But obviously, we're being nimble there as well, and to adjust our resource level, whether it's up or down. But right now, the best estimate is for a relatively flat environment for 2017.
Great, thanks. And then, Cindy, just following up on efficiency savings, it's we can infer here that you're looking for maybe a base level of 150 as we look out into 17. As we look at our models and think about kind of the cadence through next year, is there anything special to keep in mind on that front, or is just a progressive build? Thanks.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything specific that would cause you to want to put different values in for the different quarters. It'll be pretty much across the board even.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question comes from Justin Long with Stephens. Go ahead with your question. Your line is open.
Good morning, Justin.
Thanks, and good morning.
So my first question was on coal. There are a lot of people that believe industry coal volumes will be up next year. I know you said 4Q weather will be important in terms of how things play out in 2017, but just assuming normal weather patterns, do you have any high-level directional thoughts on how your coal volumes could trend next year?
Well, I guess the only directional comment that I would say is that it looks like by the end of this year, over a five-year period, we will have lost about $2 billion of coal revenue, and this year alone, probably in excess of $500 million. So based on what we're seeing right now, we think next year's decline will be significantly less than that. But beyond that, I really do think I want to stick with what I said earlier, which is that we'll have an update for you when we do the fourth quarter earnings call, both on the domestic side and on the export side, because I think we'll be in a much better position because we are in the process of gathering our information from the utilities, the 40 to 50 utilities that we serve, and I think that's the best way to give you guidance is to take the input that we get from them so that it's a lot more accurate than trying to speculate at this point.
Got it. But it's you seem to imply with your commentary that directionally you think it will be down next year. You're just, you know, not willing at this point to quantify that.
Yeah, I think that's probably directional, what I'm trying to say. I think that clearly the fact that natural gas prices have come up is helpful. It's still not at 350. Inventory levels are still above what they should be. And we only have about 1 million tons or so that probably will come out next year in terms of plant closures, so that number is getting a lot smaller. But nevertheless, I think as we look at the crystal ball right now, that is probably a safe place to be. But as I said, a cold winter, and natural gas prices move up above that 350 mark, and that picture can change very rapidly.
Thanks. That's really helpful. And one quick follow-up I wanted to ask on pricing. Frederick, I believe you said you were still getting price in intermodal, but could you say if your intermodal pricing is above inflation, or given the truck competition we're seeing, are we seeing below inflation price increases in that intermodal business?
You know, we've historically given you the breakdown into two categories that we have, merchandise and intermodal to combine and all in. I think we'll stay at that level. Pricing is a critical part for us in order to continue to reinvest in the business, and especially in intermodal, since we've put so much of our incremental capital towards intermodal. So being able to have the traffic at contributory levels and continue to push prices is a critical part of that strategy, and we are getting positive price. Exactly where it is, I think we'll keep those buckets that we have in place today.
Okay, fair enough. I appreciate the time, and congrats on the quarter.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Walter Spracklin with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open. Go ahead with your question.
Good morning. This is Sunil Manhas stepping in for Walter Spracklin. So just circling back, you mentioned how your East Coast volumes are seeing a bit of a bump, and we're just wondering how much of that volume bump is coming through the Panama Canal, and are you seeing shifting supply patterns there, and how should we think about that impact moving forward? Thanks so much.
Sure. So this is Frederick again. You know, we have seen this shift for an extended period of time that we see more of our international cargo coming in on the East Coast ports. We have not seen a significant change in the amount of volume coming in since the Panama Canal got widened. What we are seeing that there are some bigger vessels coming in, but generally it is not necessarily adding capacity. They're reconfiguring the strings to have fewer vessels. And we're also seeing some realignment with vessels that before came through the Suez Canal that is now coming through the Panama Canal instead. But we are, you know, so there's not significant change, but the pattern has been there for a long time, and we do expect that pattern to continue, that we will see more and more of our volume come through the East Coast ports.
Got it. Okay, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Our final question comes from Brian Konigsberg with Vertical Research Partners. Your line is open. Go ahead with your question.
Morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my question.
You guys covered quite a bit of ground. Just a question on inflation. It sounds just from the commentary in regards to efficiency, do you still expect it to remain pretty muted next year in the realm of 1.5%? But just looking at, you know, the labor cost incrementals you're talking about for Q4, that's running around 4%. Probably includes a little bit extra from the extra week. And then just metal prices have been strong, maybe rolling over a little bit now. But is the expectation we're still going to be living in a pretty muted environment into 17, despite, you know, some of the indicators that say it could be a little bit higher?
Yeah, I think on the inflation side, you know, we have been in a little bit of a muted environment here in the last couple of years. You know, when you start thinking about the inflation more broadly, as well as GDP and IDP potentially going up, there could be a little bit of pressure on the upside. There is a little bit of nuance in the second half of the year for labor and fringe inflation that you're picking up on, which is wage accruals that came up starting in the middle of the year. So there's that in there rather than a sort of a core external inflation run rate that that's out there. But, you know, I think what you're hearing from us is, regardless of what inflation is, we're going to do our level best to more than offset that with productivity. So I think, you know, having something in that 150, 175 range for inflation next year is probably a good starting place, and we'll offset that with productivity.
Great. If I could just follow up a real quick one, just on intermodal and the expectation that, I guess, pricing does firm a little bit later next year as supply in trucking comes down and ELDs go into place. Does that assumption require improving demand for you to see improving pricing in that business? Or if we ran just kind of where we stand today, does that make it a bit more challenging?
Yeah, I mean, it really is a supply and demand picture. So if you have ELDs and other regulatory constraints put pressure on the supply side, clearly additional growth in the economy is also helpful. And if you remove one or two of those, it's going to prolong the period where we see this excess capacity. So we're obviously following this very closely and hoping for an economy that picks up more than we currently expect. That could be very helpful, both in terms of our volume initiatives, but also in terms of pricing.
Understood. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. We'll see you all next month, next quarter. Thank you.
This concludes today's teleconference. Thank you for your participation in today's call. You may disconnect your lines.